Welcome to Carolina Business on Fire. This is your host, Michelle O'Connor. The show is sponsored by O'Connor Insurance Associates. For more information, you can check out our website at oianc.com. Carolina Business on Fire was created by business owners for business owners, exposing business success in the Carolinas one small business at a time. Carolina Business on Fire shares the amazing success stories of businesses in our community with business owners you wish you had met 5 years ago. Guests on our show share their strategies to inspire you to take your business to the level where it is on fire. Labeled one of the greatest marketing minds in the insurance industry by executives and thought leaders, Jeremiah Demaray is the top-ranked, award-winning marketing advisor and strategist with over 23 awards from the most prestigious marketing organizations in America. He is ranked as one of the country's top 40 direct marketers under 40 in the U.S. He was a key leader in building a startup company to the 17th fastest growing company in America with 1,503% growth in 3 years. Mr. Demaray led the marketing team that doubled sales at an international software company in less than 9 months, adding $26 million in new revenue. The company sold for $1.2 billion within 18 months. In April 2015, he delivered the TED Talk, The Democratization of Marketing, to a standing ovation. He's been cited on CNN, Fox News, NBC, and Worth Magazine, and his work has impacted the lives of 100,000 entrepreneurs in 51 countries, including Japan, Switzerland, Brazil, and the UK. In all, he has generated over 2 million leads using the web, which have generated sales in excess of $2 billion. I am beyond excited for this interview today, so without further delay, Jeremiah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Michelle. I'm honored to be here.
Well, thank you for sharing your time with us today. I really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to hearing all about your background.
Great. Let's get into it.
Excellent. So let's start with that. Please tell the listeners a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I was employee number 6 in a wee little company that started out in the downtown area of Chicago. This was about 13 years ago. And my job was to help this little startup that had no money generate leads. And I had no prior experience. I was basically brought in as a graphic designer to make cool-looking websites. This was back in the day when websites were brand new, and they took like 3 weeks to build, not like today when you can whip them together in less than 10 minutes with a WordPress template. And
right.
my background from there was to try to figure out creative ways to leverage anything I could inexpensively, which at that time was the internet or strategic partnerships. And fast forward 7 years later, we were an Inc. 500 fastest growth company. We had grown 1,503% in just 3 years to tens of millions of dollars. And we were well over 120 employees in the organization. So I was so grateful for the opportunity to learn all those strategies in a startup environment where basically it's you live and breathe by results. And so that's where I got started in my career of marketing. And then from there went to another organization where we were with a great team in place, were able to double sales. This time they had 1,000 employees, and that company went on to be sold for $1.2 billion. And since then I've been focusing my attention on entrepreneurs, typically as a private advisor for CEOs and small business owners and medium-sized business owners to help scale their businesses quickly using advanced marketing strategies.
Well, that is truly fascinating because you have definitely walked the walk in terms of what a small business has gone through, especially with the startup company that you were with. Living and dying by results, I think most small businesses do. So if you would, share a few of the things that you thought were the secrets to success in that company.
Sure. So one thing that was really unique, and I don't think this was something we planned, but it was something that just existed and grew out of that, is we had a very open work environment. So nobody had a closed door office. In fact, those came years later. We had a very open work environment. So I remember we were in a loft, and as our business grew from 6 employees to 10 to 15, well, all we did is we just started cramming desks one beside another. So what this allowed us to do is learn in real time. We didn't really have formal meetings because we would just wheel our wheelie chairs over to the next desk and be like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And we would make changes on the fly. So one thing I'm very grateful to have learned in that environment is the importance of real-time changes and not having a lot of walls or processes in place if it's appropriate for where you are. Obviously, when I got to the company that had 1,000 employees, process was huge because we had 115,000 clients we had to care for. So any one decision could impact so many. But in terms of small businesses, I find that it's really valuable if you can keep an open-door policy and not keep it too formal, and you'll find that you'll develop almost in real time where when things break, right away everybody can fix it, or when there's an opportunity, everybody can jump and pounce on it.
That's really valuable advice because I think you have to operate on the fly a lot and be able to be very agile in the business climate in order to take advantage of marketing opportunities or ditch ones that aren't working very well.
Exactly.
So take me from corporate America, now you're with corporate America, to how you started working with entrepreneurs and why did you start doing that?
Sure. So after working in the corporate environment, it's interesting, Michelle, because we were able to take a lot of the ideas that worked very well in the startup environment, and by applying them in the corporate environment that typically wasn't used to more creative marketing methods, where everything maybe had to be planned 6 months out and have a formal branding campaign, we used something very simple. I remember the first week there, the first 45 days, we came up with a very simple email that we sent out, which tied the iPad into a promotion to upgrade one of the programs. And we had so much response that we broke the phone lines of this. And you can imagine, you got to get a lot of calls to break the phone lines of a company that has 1,000 employees. We broke the phone lines to the sales team, and the entire operation shut down for an hour. But we were able to double sales within less than 30 days, something they hadn't previously been able to do for 1 year. After the corporate world, I went and I helped one more startup, and they grew like 611% in 45 days using a simple online funnel process. And then I said, I have such a joy seeing results, and I just love seeing people succeed at the level they deserve. My parents were entrepreneurs, that I decided to focus my efforts into helping the entrepreneurial community with the things that I've learned.
Well, that is fantastic because I think the entrepreneurial community always needs advisors and coaches who have been there and done that, not just coaches that know what to say. So your experience is truly remarkable. So in your new business venture that you're working for yourself now, who's your ideal client?
So I love to work with happy, humble, and hungry. That's kind of the three H's that I look for when someone is looking for business advisement or business coaching, because I love to work with business owners that are able to be coached, that have a hunger to grow, and just are generally happy people, that they don't need somebody to come into their business or their life to make them happy, that really they are self-sustained. You know, they're happy, they're complete as people, but they know they want more, and they're open to advice on how to grow. So for me, an ideal client is somebody that's doing maybe $1 million in revenue or more every year. They're open to digital strategies, which can fuel their growth probably a lot faster than maybe other traditional models, which we still use, but I find that some of the quickest results we can get is using digital strategies. And really, they can be located anywhere. I've worked with organizations in China, South Africa, Cyprus, Europe, Canada, and all over the United States. And since my business advisement is virtual, we do this via Skype meetings or GoToWebinar.
Very cool. Now, are you targeting a particular industry? I know your experience has been in the insurance industry or insurance world. Are you targeting a specific industry?
Yeah, so a lot of my experience has been in the world of finance and insurance, and I really love working with insurance agents and financial advisors, and I've got enough of a track record there that I know in advance the things that will work or not work. However, I do consult with software companies, sales training organizations, associations. I have a client that's a diamond mine, and another one that's a training organization. So I work with various kinds of organizations, but I've kind of developed a niche in the insurance and financial services. There's an old adage that says there's riches in niches. So one of the things that I teach in my programs is if you can niche yourself in a market, instead of being another small fish in a large pond, you can be a large fish in a small pond. And people tend to want to work with people who have seen their problem before. So one takeaway I would give to listeners would be, if you have a track record in a specific industry, consider just doing a download of all of your clients that you've served and look at the kinds of companies they work with and see if you see a pattern. Usually if there's a pattern, there's enough of an argument that could be said where you could position your organization to serve a specific market. For example, you might find that you have two particular patterns in your organization. Maybe you work very well with, let's say, contractors, and you work very well with medical organizations. What you could do is you could have two different websites, and I have clients that do this. They have one website that has all language related to serving one niche, and then they change the website for a completely different niche, even though it's the same organization. They might set something up like solutionsforcontractors.com or solutionsformedicaldoctors.com or something like that. And that's been something that's really helped me and my clients to grow, is to find niches that they can serve.
That's a great piece of advice. So let's talk about your team. You mentioned that your organization's virtual right now, so it must mean a whole new level of management to have a team. Do you have a team of employees?
I do. We're about, I'd say we're about 12 of us that work all over the world, and we typically have our meetings via Skype, or we'd use GoToMeeting, and I request that all team members check in via webcam, because sometimes it's difficult to build a one-on-one relationship with someone you've never met, especially if you can't see their face. So our weekly team meetings we do via webcam, so they can see me and I can see them. That builds a lot of camaraderie. We've also built into our weekly meetings a very cool update system, which gives a personal update on what's going on in everybody's life, so that when we come to these meetings, we know that, you know, we're all human beings that are working on a business. We're not just machines, you know, performing business tasks. And something that we've used to help, Michelle, and this is something that everybody could do, we use a very simple and free online personality profile called Kiersey, K-I-E-R-S-E-Y. And this is an impressive body of work. It works very similar to Myers-Briggs and perhaps some other ones where people say, you know, I'm an INTJ or so on. But it gives a really nice breakdown of the personality type. So I can remember the first person I ever hired, I asked them in the interview process prior to getting on the call, please take this free Kiersey test and let me know what the results are. And because we internally have done a lot of research on psychological matching, I knew the type of person I needed to have for this particular role based on my weaknesses. And I think that's another thing that in a virtual organization, you have to be very open and honest with yourself on what your weaknesses are so that you can find people to compliment them without feeling threatened. So the person
Oh, sure.
that the first, you know, the first hire that I had with this is absolutely unbelievable, and she's been with me for years now. And we just have the perfectly suited personality. In fact, to the point where, you know, my wife tells me, you know, if this person wasn't on your team, you wouldn't have a team, because just of how
That's pretty strong.
Core. Yeah, how core that is. And we hire everyone else based on that process as well.
That's very cool. That's a great piece of advice on that website, too. That's one I actually haven't heard of, and we do a lot of profiling as well. But that's great. I think in our world that having virtual employees is something that's still a little bit foreign, even though we have fabulous technology, to a lot of brick and mortar places. And certainly there's talent that exists that you might be able to take advantage of if we open our minds a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you, and sites like Upwork and Elance have just made it so easy for entrepreneurs to find great people. And what I've noticed, Michelle, is that there's a shift that's happened, it's actually been happening for the past 5 to 7 years, where you have these amazing people who are tired of the corporate life that have incredible skill sets and knowledge, and maybe due to a life event, like they had a child or their third child, or they just don't want to live in the United States or Canada anymore. They want to live abroad and they prefer to build a lifestyle and not a job. And there's an incredible group of people out there that you could hire for really affordably, as low as, $5 an hour if you want to go overseas for repetitive tasks to very skilled labor. That is really accountability based. So instead of taking on the risk of an FTE or a full-time employee, you can find people who fulfill functions and then slowly bring them into your program after an evaluation where they've both done work for you and they've gotten paid. So they're happy with it. You're happy to see how the relationship grows. And from there, you can look at a contract, an ongoing contract basis where you guarantee them a certain number of hours per work, which is really what freelancers want. So a quick tip I can offer is when you're posting a job on Upwork or Elance, which are basically two websites, they're both owned by the same company, but they have different candidates. When you post a job on there, and if you're serious about a long-term engagement, put that in there. To say, looking for somebody that does, let's say, graphic design or web programming or marketing consulting or whatever it is, want a short-term project to start with possibility of long-term, you'll get a higher quality candidate because the best freelancers don't want to be rethinking what they have to do every month. They don't want to be thinking, well, what's the next project I have to work on? So if you find a great person, even if you've got to pay them a little bit more after the first project, I recommend that. Because you'll be able to keep them for life, and you won't have to keep, searching for those next people to replace the last one.
Oh, sure. That's really good advice. We've had a little experience with Upwork with your suggestion, and I've been extremely pleased with the help that I've gotten. It was for simple, repetitive tasks that I needed done quickly, and the work quality was excellent. And it's amazing what you can do in 5 minutes virtually to get somebody set up to do a project for you that would take 2 hours.
Absolutely. I think the evaluation you have to make, and I think you have done a great job with this in your organization, is what is my time worth? And if your
Right.
time is worth more than $10 an hour, then there's somebody out there who wants to do it faster, cheaper, and better than you can probably do it. So it's all about valuing that time you have. And when you have more time, you can be more strategic. And you can make bigger moves in your business because you can be switching from working in your business to working on your business.
Absolutely, and I think that's more personally as an entrepreneur struggle for me is to farm it out. So I have tried really hard to be very intentional in the last year about my time and how long it would take me to do a task. So that's great advice. So tell me, as you reflect back on some of the lessons that you've learned, not only from your business currently, but from corporate America and the businesses that you were operating prior to that, what are some lessons that you've learned? Maybe your top two lessons learned.
Sure. So the first lesson I learned it by accident because the first product that we were mar that I was marketing was something that didn't exist before. So what we had to do, it wasn't like going into a market that A knows they have a need for the product and B knows that there's other products like yours that existed. It was really a market that A had no idea the product existed, and B didn't even know they had a need for the product. So what we had to do was lead by giving value. And what I mean by that in a practical marketing sense is all of our marketing was not about, all of our marketing was about educating them on what could be possible. And whenever you're the first person in a blue ocean environment, the most important thing to do is to educate. And so what we did is we would grow our business by providing very valuable white papers. We held webinars where we interviewed people who were very successful. We were giving away free tips and giving away free information that people would normally pay for. We held live events across the country where we would invite people in our market who are very successful to freely and openly share their successes in the business. And by virtue of going out there as a thought leader, we transformed the organization into one that sold our product into a thought leader that was giving to the industry. And as people started to realize what could be possible, that's when we converted them to sales. And it was interesting because our number one competitor started about 1 year after us. And we didn't have a significant market advantage in terms of clients. But what we did is we had an incredible base of knowledge and education that we had created. And so when our competitor came in, the only position they decided to use was that of pricing or price gouging. So what they would do is they would come behind our proposals and they would offer to sell it at $10 or $20 or $100 less per month. And they, in 7 years, they still never kept up with our growth because we led by giving value first. So the big lesson I took away, Michelle, my first one was always give value before you accept any money. So even before people get into a relationship with you, they should feel that they have gotten something from you that they should have paid for, and you gave it to them for free, and you didn't make them feel bad about it. In fact, you came across as a generous person, and that's been a huge lesson that I've learned in how we always grow or market new products. The second lesson that I've learned is the fastest, simplest, and easiest way to grow any business is by setting up strategic partners. So, for example, if you have a business that that targets a specific demographic, let's say you go after small business owners. You know, I think most of the people listening to this show today have small business owners possibly as a client. So what I would do is I would find people who already have the clients that I want. So, for example, there could be business consultants in the city. There could be attorneys, CPAs, graphic designers, accountants, printers, anybody that serves the small business community. And I would go and set up relationships with each one of them one by one. And they're very simple to set up. You can simply approach it like, we're getting our business off the ground and we see you as a local authority and you have a lot of small business owners. We would love to do a free training around our area of specialty that we will not charge for, and we could do it as a webinar or a live person event. We will normally charge, you know, $500 or $1,000 for this kind of advanced training, but because we want to build a good relationship with your clients, we'd like to do it with our compliments. All we ask is that you send out a short email that promotes the webinar, and of course we will do the same thing to our list as well. Michelle, you wouldn't believe the amount of people that would be totally open to doing something like that, but very few people did it. And when I was, that was really the key to the success of the first organization that I helped, is we went out and found people that had the audience we wanted, and we just did these incredible webinars that they should have been doing themselves, but we just came in and did it instead. And by virtue of doing that, we grew our database by thousands of people every single month because we had set up several of these. So this is something that a small business can do. Yeah, you could even do this like on LinkedIn, Michelle, where find an area where you have, maybe there's a LinkedIn group, right, where somebody owns the group. Let's say it's the local business connector group. I know most of the major cities have at least one power group, and you can approach the group owner with that idea. Group owners on LinkedIn have the ability to send one email a week to their list, and most of them don't know how to add value or monetize their group. You could even kick in a sign-up bonus, like a marketing fee, that anybody who comes from the group, you give a percentage or a one-time bonus to the group owner, which helps these group owners to monetize their groups.
Very cool. That sounds like a really good strategy.
Yeah, it's worked really well for many of our clients.
Especially when you're thinking about niches that you mentioned earlier and really niching yourself and targeting a specific group.
Yeah, you know, the other thing you could do too, Michelle, is if there isn't a group around, you know, who you serve, you can create a group around that audience. One of the services that we're in the process of launching, actually, we've been doing it for a while, but we're kind of going public with it, if you will, is we've been working with entrepreneurs to build local power groups on LinkedIn, inside their local areas. And what this does is we work with them, and part of it is done for you, part of it is they do it themselves. But what we're seeing is people are adding about 100 high quality business professionals, executives, and thought leaders into their group every month, and they're getting anywhere from 10, 15, 20, 30 appointments a month with these people, positioning them kind of like the star of a virtual chamber of commerce. Right, I think all of us have at one time been to a chamber of commerce meeting, and it's kind of tough sometimes to be the one who kind of stands out. Like, nobody's ever going to be the star of the chamber unless you're like the president of it. But imagine being able to build a group, right, where you're the owner, you can block out any of your competitors, and you're the one who's connecting all these people. And there's a wonderful book if you want to learn about, you know, that whole mentality. I can recommend to listeners. It's the book Go Giver. Actually, I'll give you two. The first one is The Go-Giver, written by Bob Berg. It was an international bestseller. And then the other one is called Power Connectors. And if you get that philosophy where you lead by giving to people and you don't see people just as sources of money for you, like do they have a big old money bag on their head and everyone that comes around, ooh, this person could be a great prospect. Ooh, I can make a lot of money off this person. And you really lead like, hey, I wonder how I can help boost this person's business today. Maybe they need a referral to a printer. Maybe they need a referral to a great attorney. Maybe they need a referral to a good accountant. I'm just going to show up and listen and see how I can refer them. And these people always sell more than those that just show up to be like, what can I get out of you? So if that's the kind of a new concept for some of the listeners, those would be two awesome books to take a look at.
Fantastic. Thanks for sharing those. They both sound great. So you've mentioned a new idea that you just recently have started to launch. How do you generate new ideas? I know that the technology world's ever changing, and I know that you're very active in the technology marketing arena. How do you continue to stay fresh?
What I find is really helpful, Michelle, is to look at what's working in other verticals and then ask yourself, how could I apply this to mine? So one entrepreneurial hat one could put on is to be an importer. How do I import this idea into my market? For example, you know, the Viagra was actually never developed to do what it does. It was developed as a heart medication. The roll-on deodorant was built out of inspiration from somebody looking at the ballpoint pen. And these are just people who took a look at one industry and said, huh, how do I apply this to a completely different market? And chances are, if you're listening to this show today and you're in a specific market, you're probably doing 90% of the same things that your competitors are doing. What I love about what you and Terry have done, Michelle, with this show, for example, is I have never, you know, met in the Carolinas another insurance agency that has created a radio show to connect business leaders. I think that's a brilliant concept, and it's just a great idea that you've taken the concept of a media platform and you've brought it into your agency as a way to give back to the community. See, that's a really great example of thinking outside the box and creating new ideas. So my recommendation to people is look at what's working. Like, if you're in the world of accounting, you should buy magazines on fitness. If you're in the world of law, you should buy magazines on graphic design, to see what are other people doing, because you can pick up incredible little ideas. And there's one gentleman, for example, who's a financial advisor, and he started, and most financial advisors only get paid if you move your assets with them or you hire them for fee-based planning. What he did is, in addition to doing all of that, he started a little newsletter where every month he would send out a newsletter to his clients, which cost them, I think it was like $100 a year. He would send them 12 issues of this newsletter every month, and he built a multi-million dollar business just off of providing financial advice, out of newsletters. Howard Ruff was his name, and he wrote something called the Ruff Report. So for the same thing for you, right? As a business owner, could you start a little newsletter that you charge $20 a month? And you don't need to make $1 million, but what if it brought in, after a couple of years, $10,000 a month, right? What could that do for your operational costs? What could it do to fund other marketing? What does it do to bring in new clients? And when you ask people for a small fee for your advice, what it does is it elevates your advice from free information to strategic counsel. So you've elevated your own advice, and you've gotten paid for it a little bit, and you've turned a prospect into a client. Even if the client is paying you $10 a month, they're still a client. So they've opened, they've cracked their wallet a little bit, and now you can use that opportunity to serve them at a higher level with your actual services.
That's fantastic. I'm familiar with Ruff Notes. I'm very familiar with Ruff Notes. So that's a fantastic suggestion. I love it. Well, Jeremiah, I know that you and your business certainly have been on fire from your bio, but I'd like to ask you the very last question. It's the O'Connor Insurance question. If you will please finish this sentence, my business is on fire because...
Because I love working with people.
Awesome. That's great. I love it. Well, it's certainly been a pleasure today to talk to you, and I can't thank you enough for all the fabulous marketing strategies that you've shared. There is a ton of good advice and good input for anyone that's looking for some new strategies today.
Thanks so much, Michelle. It's an honor to be on this show. Please say hello to Terry, and I really love what you guys are doing with this show. It's amazing. And please, if you're listening to the show, share it with your friends and family and colleagues. This to me is going to be is the seed of something really big that's going to happen in the Carolinas. So thank you so much. It's quite an honor to be here, Michelle.
Oh, you're awesome. Thank you so much, Jeremiah. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Well, it has certainly been a pleasure having Jeremiah on the show today. I can't thank him enough for sharing all of the amazing marketing information that he shared today with our listeners. If you go to our website, Carolina Business on Fire, in the description will be all of the books that Jeremiah mentioned, as well as the personality profile that he mentioned, in case you'd like to have more information about those things. Thank you for listening to our show. You can listen to more episodes of Carolina Business on Fire on our website, carolinabusinessonfire.com. Just a reminder, this show is sponsored by O'Connor Insurance Associates. O'Connor Insurance is an independent insurance agency specializing in relationships and providing customized solutions to meet your business, personal, and life insurance needs. You can get more information at oianc.com.